Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal with your hosts, Sherry Peng and Jason O'Fear. Explore with us the world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and Bigfoot. You can also call into the show at 215-383-3999 and join the discussion.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jason O'Fear, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. We have a great guest tonight. Sherry, how are you?
Good. How are you, Jason? Are you doing better?
Oh, I have this inability to sleep, so I'm always kind of like a zombie. But I was busy taking care of errands today, so I didn't get much relaxed time. But excited about the show we got this evening. How was your week?
Very good. Very eventful. Just work, reading. I mean, I've just been very blessed. And got a run in today, finally, after 5 days of snow. We still have 4 inches up here, and it's covered like crazy, but we're doing good. Very good day today.
The weather has just been kind of nasty with ice. I actually was so concerned. I don't get off work till 1 in the morning, so I was so concerned with ice. I was playing it safe and putting on chains that I happened to have. Thank God I did, because it's been a mess out here in Portland the last several days. A lot of accidents, and I think it's always good to play it safe. But hey, before we bring the guest on, or before you let us know who our guest is this evening, did you see that video I posted on our Facebook page with that UFO thing?
Yes. What now? That was very interesting. It was amazing. You didn't take it yourself. You got it from a website?
Yeah, I just saw it and I thought it was interesting, so I posted it on the Facebook page, and a lot of people saw it on our Facebook page. I don't know why that particular post performed so well, but it's very interesting. Anybody wants to see something UFO related that's interesting, they can check out the Facebook page, Paranormal Horizons on Facebook, and it's just really weird. You know, it could be fake just like everything else out there, but it's kind of interesting to watch. But if it is real, basically what people are surmising it could be is some sort of stargate, like the clouds are getting sucked into this one particular isolated point in a swirling fashion. You know, kind of like a whirlpool in the sky, and then you see this white object go up to the center of it, and it disappears. So people were speculating that it could be some sort of like stargate. So just interesting to watch.
Okay, Jason, what is stargate? Can you tell me?
I'm not an expert. I assume it's some sort of the alien races. Supposed alien races are creating some sort of wormhole, which basically bends space and time. It's like taking a piece of paper and you draw one circle or dot at one end and one dot at the other end of the paper, and the paper, say, represents the galaxy. Well, it's a tremendous distance to go from one point to the other. Creating a wormhole is basically taking that paper and folding it in half and putting the two points together. So it basically bends space and time. So you don't have to cross the long distance, but I by no means am any expert, so that's what I think. But anyway, so we're not going to be covering UFOs tonight. We have a very interesting subject. I spoke a little bit with our guest a little bit before the show, and so why don't you give us a brief intro, and we'll bring him on, and he can kind of tell us a little bit more about himself.
Okay. Well, his name is Mike Nolte. He can correct me if I'm wrong in how to pronounce his last name. And he is with Share International. Now, I don't know if he still is, but he has done a lot of work into self-realization. And he's going to share his wisdom, techniques, what you can get out of by doing the self realization, whatever it is, I'm open to it. I just think that's a really cool subject. So I just thought, well, that'd be cool to have him come on air and be able to share something different for our listeners.
Yeah, you know, if there's anybody on this planet that needs to realize oneself more, it would be me. I'm a mess. So let's go ahead and we'll get them on right now and learn more a little bit more about self-realization.
Well, yes.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Mike.
Can you hear me?
Can hear
you
loud
and
clear.
Great. Well, my name is Mike Nolly. I've been studying esotericism and books on self-realization for many years. I'm basically a beginner in the process of what we might call self-realization. Many people perhaps heard of the Self-Realization Fellowship, which is an organization which is run by devotees of Paramahansa Yogananda. Maybe some of you have heard that name. Yogananda is an Indian guru who is actually one of a great number of gurus or very enlightened human beings who have lived in India over the past two centuries. And what self-realization is not a religion or an ideology, but a process by which any human being can come to the realization that they are one with God. That there is no separation between the divine consciousness and themselves. And so what I'd like to do tonight for our listeners is bring together the technique and some of the miraculous aspects of self-realization with an aspect of scientific inquiry which is not that well known, which many people call ormus. And I'm going to link them together through the golden thread of the breath, or the vital aspect of air, which is oxygen. Now, self-realization is done in part through the transformation of breath into mind, according to Yogananda. It's essentially, first of all, the oxygenating of the blood, but also the transformation of the ordinary life processes, the process of inhalation and exhalation, into an energetic phenomenon that transforms consciousness itself. And
self-realization is, so the purpose of self-realization is that to be make you more one with God, sort of thing, where you're kind of connecting to source?
Okay. Yes. And it's a progressive phenomenon. It starts with the desire to be close to God that any individual may have, and it ends in a state of essentially a divine omniscience, of being continuously aware of the planet and the universe as a whole. And I would argue, and many other people would argue, there are beings on our planet who have reached this high state and beyond. Figures like the Christ, for example, or the Buddha, or in the case of Yogananda's Mahaguru, that would be Babaji. Have you guys heard of Babaji before?
Yes, I've heard it. What about Mother Mira? I went to see Mother Mira a couple of years ago when she came in. Or Amma? Is it Amma? Is that the same thing,
Amma,
where they reach that type of enlightenment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Amma, and there's actually a three or four that I've heard of. I can't remember their names of female saints in India. So there's no sense that males are the only ones that can reach that state. They're
I'm going to share this experience. When my friend and I went to see Mother Mira, and Mother Mira, you had to stand in line and go up and knee before her hands. I mean, literally bow out of respect and kneel and bow. And it was quite interesting because what she does is she'll look at you, she'll touch you, and she looks at you. And I was in cloud nine. From the time I left and she made contact with my soul to the time, probably the next day, I was just in awe because the lady is just so enlightened. The feeling you got was that she could see right through your soul. There's nothing absolutely that you could not hide that she not knew. It was amazing. It was really loving but intense, and it made an impact on me. I would love to see her again. So I understand what you're saying.
Many people have had that. Go ahead.
I'm not familiar with these people. So for somebody that's skeptical out there,
mm-hmm.
saying, because Jerry, you were talking about looking into your soul. What if somebody, like, how would you know that? Like, somebody could just say, oh, it's just psychological games or something like that, some sort of mental process that makes you feel that this person is really connecting with you. Is there anything, Sherry, that, I don't know.
Yes.
I guess I'm just trying to play skeptical right now.
If you were
That's great. I love that because he's so, you know, he balances us out.
Mm-hmm.
When I looked at her and I gazed in her eyes and it was a connection. It was like a connection of the soul. It was mm-hmm. something that you could not describe. It was something that you had to feel.
Yep.
And
yep.
it's like feeling in a way, you know, I don't know, Jason, if you've ever experienced it, not to go on a tangent, but did you ever talk, you ever met any women, or it could be a man, but usually it come in opposite sex. You ever met somebody where you looked at them and it was like instant connection, but it wasn't sexual. It was something that you guys connected. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to That's what I'm trying to equate the feeling of, is the connection of the soul, not feeling like you have to be pretend or ego get at stake. It's this raw soul. Do you understand? Have you ever felt that way towards somebody you ever met, Jason?
Kinda, yeah. You had something
that's
you were
kind of like
what,
for me when I saw Mother Mira.
Yeah.
It wasn't sexual. It wasn't something like, oh my God, she's reading through my mind and I'm afraid and she's, you know, I'm a bad person. She knows that I've done some bad things when I grew up. And no, it was actual connection and loving, unconditional
mm-hmm.
love. Does
yeah.
that make sense? Does that make sense, Mike? Do you understand what that
yes.
means?
Yes. And in fact, if our listeners were to take a gander at the book Autobiography of a Yogi, you would come up with 10, 15, 20 examples in that book of, well, more than that, of completely miraculous events where the guru was able to float in midair, you know, things like this. But particularly what's notable about them is their ability to connect with you in such a way that you feel completely at one with the divine. And there's one thing I actually wanted to read that's actually Yogananda's experience of his guru, Yukteswar. And he describes the experience of being one with existence. So if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah. No, go for it.
So
go for it.
Yeah. Yogananda had been sort of chafing at the bit to visit the Himalayas in his youth, and well under the tutelage of Yukteswar, who is a very advanced swami. And finally he was granted the permission to go, at which point he met with Ram Gopal, who is a sleeping saint, another one of these very advanced human beings who lives without sleeping in the Himalayas. So I'll start with that. Anyway, he came back to his residence with Yukteswar, and at that point, Yukteswar gives him the experience that he'd been looking for, experience of samadhi. And so I'll read from there.
Okay.
Yukteswar struck gently on my chest above the heart. My body became immovably rooted. Breath was drawn out of my lungs as if by some huge magnet. Soul and mind instantly lost their physical bondage and streamed out like a fluid, piercing light from every pore. The flesh was as though dead, yet in my intense awareness, I knew that never before had I been fully alive. My sense of identity was no longer narrowly confined to a body, but embraced the circumambient atoms. People on distant streets seemed to be moving gently over my own remote periphery. The roots of plants and trees appeared through a dim transparency of the soil. I discerned the inward flow of their sap. The whole vicinity lay bare before me. My ordinary frontal vision was now changed to a vast spherical sight, simultaneously all-perceptive. Through the back of my head, I saw men strolling far down Raigat Road, and noticed also a white cow who was leisurely approaching. When she reached the space in front of the open ashram gate, I observed her with my two physical eyes. As she passed by behind the brick wall, I saw her clearly still. All objects within my panoramic gaze trembled and vibrated like quick motion pictures. My body, masters, the pillared courtyard, the furniture and floor, the trees and sunshine, occasionally became violently agitated until all melted into a luminescent sea, even as sugar crystals thrown into a glass of water dissolve after being shaken. The unifying light alternated with materializations of forms, the metamorphoses revealing the law of cause and effect in creation. An oceanic joy broke upon the calm, endless shores of my soul. The spirit of God, I realized, is exhaustless bliss. His body is countless tissues of light. A swelling glory within me began to envelop towns, continents, the earth, solar and stellar systems, tenuous nebulae, and floating universes. Anyway, it goes on and on. And with the last paragraph, I cognized the center of the Empyrean as a point of intuitive perception in my heart. Irradiating splendor issued from my nucleus to every part of the universal structure. Blissful Amrita, which is a term that means the nectar of immortality, pulsed through me with a quicksilver-like fluidity. The creative voice of God I heard resounding as Aum, the vibration of the cosmic motor. So, kind of interesting description of his experience of samadhi. So what I'd like to do is connect this experience of self-realization, which is developed over many years through meditation techniques, with a little-known scientific phenomenon, which many people call Ormus. And one thing that...
I was just going to say we were talking a little bit before that about the show, and it sounded really interesting. I'm very curious about it.
Yep. So if you look at the experiences of enlightenment that yogis in India have had and have transmitted to their students and disciples, it's connected with the breath. So if you can imagine, ordinarily the breath is the source of life in the body, but according to Eastern teachings, it's also an aspect of mind. So what Yogananda says, and let me pull this out here. The ancient yogic technique converts the breath into mind. By spiritual advancement, one is able to cognize the breath as an active mind, a dream breath. So what's happening physiologically, apparently, is the blood is being super oxygenated by the inhalation and exhalation, and that breath is being retained and used to transform the body. And also simultaneously, the individual's emotional body and mental body, the other formal aspects of the person, his memories, his feelings, are all being transmuted through, again, the action of breath or mind in its various aspects into something more universal, into something more intangible that can penetrate reality in a deeper way in the way that we just heard from Yogananda. Now, there's an interesting correspondence to this effect that was noticed actually relatively recently, in the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s, by a fellow named Barry Carter. Now, Barry Carter had a friend named Jim. And Jim was an electrical engineer who was in the process of developing an ozone generator to sterilize medical equipment. And they theorized, well, maybe there's some other things that we can do with this ozone generator. Ozone, as you know, is a form of oxygen that's super energized through electricity. It's very, very active, very chemically active form of oxygen that can do a lot of things. Anyway, so they developed this ozone generator, and they decided that they would try to use mine wastewater, to purify mine wastewater through this ozone generator. And so they got situated, got the thing running, and were, over a period of weeks, using this device. And Jim, the individual who had invented it, accidentally became exposed to the super energized mine wastewater mixed with ozone, and received just a tremendous shock to his body, and thereafter exhibited some very, very unusual symptoms. For example, that he would find that whatever he would touch, he would leave gold fingerprints on. And whatever he wore retained a sort of viscous fluid-like, oil-like substance, which had fairly miraculous properties, could dissolve gold or other metals. And I also want to note another I'll just quote from the website here. So I'll just quote from the website. This is on www.subtleenergies.com / Ormus. Anyway, you can look at it through Google and then type in Barry Carter Ormus experience. So Jim experienced a lot of... Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead. I'll ask when you're done reading that.
So Jim experienced a lot of electrical effects following his exposure to the ozonated mine wastewater. Whenever Jim would take a shower, it would be like electrical sparks hitting his skin. Every drop would deliver an electric shock to him, and it wasn't just a little electric shock. It was literally almost audible shocks. Here are some more quotes for our interview with Jim. So did this happen once or twice or continually, like day after day, did you get this effect? And Jim says, I had that effect for 5 months afterwards. And he says, yeah, I mean, it was real bad. In fact, I could generate a huge amount of static electricity by taking an article of clothing that I wore and have right near but not in contact with a showerhead stream, and it would charge the droplets to the point where they were making just electrical shocks. And this is embarrassing, but he said whenever he would pee, electrical sparks would jump between his toes and the bolts of the bottom of the toilet. And whenever he was taking a shower, he would notice that windows and doors would blow open and shut, like winds would happen in the room, blowing things around. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at Autobiography of Yogi, there is a case of this very ability being exemplified by one of the yogis, where he's able to, through a certain pranayama technique, which is a type of yogic breathing, where they breathe intensely, was able to make, in a closed room, violent winds swirl around. So, we have an interesting little connection here between ozonated mine wastewater and a body that's been transformed by an ethereal substance, and what yogis in India are doing through the use of the breath. And the connecting factor is oxygen and also the heart, because for a yogi, the heart is the center of his being, both physically in the sense of the blood and also in the sense of consciousness, because the self, in fact, the entire universe for the yogi resides in his own heart.
So I make sure I understand this correctly. So he created some sort of ozone machine which had an unexpected effect of having all these strange after effects. Is that right?
Yeah. Basically, what was going on is that the mine wastewater was being activated in some way by the ozone. The ozone was binding to the residual metals and transforming them and transmuting them into a substance that was biologically active, rather than just kind of washing out the skin, which would be normally the case with something like that. They became supercharged and infiltrated Jim's physical being and gave him not only these physical symptoms, but also hallucinations, but visions of angels, things like that, voices, hallucinations, and also the ability to basically know anything. So if someone asked him any sort of absurd technical question, he'd be able to answer without a second thought.
Were the things that were happening, like the gold fingerprints and all that,
mm-hmm.
was that ever substantiated by like other observers?
Yes. So
he's not making up a story, like other people can verify it.
No, his family could verify it. In fact, the vehicle that he was driving during these 5 or 6 months before he took some chelating medicine to take this out of him, because it was actually harming him because there was too much of it. The vehicle that he drove became so infused with this weird, strange material that it had to be totaled. And they brought it to the person to evaluate. And the guy was like, well, that vehicle looks fine. He got in to start it and just took off just as soon as he tried to start it. He became, the substance affected him in a way that scared him deeply. So he got out of the car and basically ran away and agreed that it was totaled. So they put it in a gigantic polyethylene bag and sent it to the dump. So there was multiple confirmations of this.
Well, it sounds really interesting. Are there ways that it sounds like you're saying it's a what's harming him?
Yes.
Are there because of the dose? But are there ways that people can utilize or manifest this substance and use it for growth?
Yes. So the ancient alchemists actually did use very tiny amounts of the Philosopher's Stone in order to affect their consciousness. And there are many people today, actually, that take Ormus in one form or another. But it's important to note that for the purposes of advancement, it's much more important to transform or transmute one's thoughts and emotions than one's physical body. Because, one can attain all kinds of physical powers, but if the person isn't purified in intent, then they'll destroy themselves through the acquisition of powers. And basically, the underlying factor in self-realization is detachment. And it's what unifies the saint with the ordinary human being. And according to Maitreya, who's another great avatar we've talked about in the past, detachment, living a life of sincerity, honesty, and detachment is itself the path to salvation, not the acquisition of powers or characteristics or qualities. So, in fact, in an autobiography of a yogi, he does talk about people who've acquired siddhis or powers who nevertheless were not self-realized and suffered as a result. So,
well, we live in such an ego society, and the problem, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to go and get to that state of mind because, you know, we're trained and our thought process is all about, you know, we're better than everybody else, and it's all feeding our egos instead of looking at, you know, looking at that person and looking at ourselves and saying, what can we do to improve ourselves instead of judging and making, making, you know, attachments towards other people.
Yeah. I would tend to agree with that there are all kinds of things that we think of as being positive qualities that in fact can be really quite negative. And especially in the West, we have a fondness for attachment that in the East they've, at least in terms of the yoga traditions, have figured out. In the West, we haven't really figured out what it means to be detached. We think of detachment as a negative thing. If I become detached, I sort of, well, you know, I sort of talk to myself and I, you know, live in a cardboard box or whatever. But what they mean in the East by detachment is living your life in such a way that you don't cling to experiences. You don't cling to an experience of harm or benefit, and you let it pass by you. And what that allows you to do is free yourself of conditioning of forms and experiences which otherwise would cling to you. So this is both for both a human being and for a yogi. A yogi has to learn to detach from experiences of divine powers, because if he doesn't, those same divine powers will tend to surround him and imprison him. So the same thing is true of a human being. They have to experience life and go through life in a graceful way, without attaching to one experience and saying, I want more of this or I want less of that. And what then that provides for the human being is unremitting bliss. I'm not saying that I experience this entirely, because I'm not entirely detached, but the more detachment I have, in the sense of going throughout life without clinging, the more blissful I am.
So for the lay person, or just not even a lay person, somebody that doesn't know anything about this, that wants to become detached and start on the path of self-realization, where would one start?
That's a great question. There are a number of different techniques, some of which may help you develop more quickly, some less quickly. But to sum up the biggest picture, you could describe the path as being service and meditation. Service tends to decentralize you and put you in a situation where you're not focused on yourself, and meditation tends to bring you in contact with God as you understand it. And for myself, I've practiced something called transmission meditation for many years, which has helped me a lot. And it's a group meditation which is practiced around the world. You can look at transmissionmeditation.org. You can find the information about it. It works with the avatars, the great ones, to bring light and love into the world. And its focus is just above and between the eyebrows. So in Yogananda school, that's the same center that they use. It's the they call it the third eye, or the Agya center. And at any rate, by focusing there in various types of meditation, you can tap into the stream of Krishna consciousness, or the stream of awareness that is able to take you eventually up into infinity, into total awareness. And
what was the name of that website again?
TransmissionMeditation.org.
.org?
O-R-G.
Oh, O-R-G.
Yeah. So there's also...
Sorry, you said orgy.
There's also, of course, Kriya Yoga, which is the form of yoga that is practiced by Yogananda and by that lineage of avatars, and which was fortunately given to humanity through Lahiri Mahashaya, who was a disciple of Babaji himself. And Babaji transmitted this technique of Kriya Yoga to Mahashaya, who then asked him, literally pleaded with Babaji to permit him to pass it on to whoever would need it. And so henceforth, the Self-Realization Fellowship, which you can find their website, I think it's srsf.org, have been initiating people into Kriya Yoga as a way of helping them along the path of self-realization. So,
that's
me. I know I've tried to... Meditation takes a lot of discipline, you know, to be able to do it every day. I've tried it, but I always just, I don't know, get distracted. It's a real challenge to dedicate oneself to, you know, set the time aside and to go do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing that I've noticed over the years is that it was easiest to start in a group meditation for me. I had still have a great deal of difficulty meditating by myself because I lack discipline. And so having a weekly meditation group that I attend helps me have that time every week, that hour, hour and a half or whatever, in which I'm definitely trying to focus. And once I began with that, then it was easier to go into personal meditations. So transmission meditation, which I mentioned, is a group meditation. It's usually an hour to 3 hours a week, although there's some groups that meet 3 hours three times a week. But that's a more advanced type of thing. But
is the meditation is an hour to 3 hours?
Yeah, most transmission meditation groups meet for about an hour, sometimes a bit longer. The most advanced ones meet for 3 hours. So.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, there are lots of meditation groups that you can join that will meet approximately for an hour. And I would, of course, I would recommend transmission for the beginner. But anything is better than nothing.
Right, exactly.
I
have no problem getting into a meditation.
It,
like you said, it's making it your time to actually do it. And that's, that's the biggest thing.
One other thing that which is I've noticed to a degree lacking in a lot of meditation groups in America is the correct focus. Many people focus on breathing or on things like this. That's, to my mind, to a degree, aside from the point. It's not the actual process of breathing which is important, but the awareness of the breath. The breath is something much more than breathing. The breath is the life which passes, which is consciousness itself, which is coming in and out of you, and which is not strictly you. It's everywhere and in everything. It's the spark of life that animates everything in existence. So when you're focusing, when they ask you to focus on the breath, what you should be focusing on is that you are that. You are the universe. You are awareness itself. And at that same time, to keep the focus above and between the eyebrows. And I would also recommend, of course, the practices that initial meditation techniques that the SRF Self-Realization Fellowship describes. You can go on their website and Actually, there's a cost to sign up to get the lessons, but you can get them elsewhere. So
I'm definitely going to check it out. If anybody needs calmness in their life, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of group meditation. That actually hadn't even occurred to me,
mm-hmm.
that people go actually do it. And I can see that working versus just sitting at home and trying to be dedicated to do it.
Yeah. I would recommend it to start out with. And meditation can be frustrating. There's the constant assault of physical, bodily sensations, thoughts, and feelings. And it's just important to recognize that those are transitory. They pass. You don't have to negate them or force them down or say, darn it, you thoughts, stop it. You just observe them with detachment. And that's a classic Buddhist technique, for that matter, Vipassana, which is actually, I don't know that much about. The technique of insight in the Buddhist tradition is to observe the thoughts as they come and they go with a sense of detachment. And that allows one to, again, go through life with detachment, with grace, and without the sense of clinging and attachment. That's a very traditional, classic Buddhist approach.
My dad is a Buddhist. And he's, it was very much, that's pretty much where he, you know, his belief systems were, was in the Buddhist tradition, very much
mm-hmm.
so. Very, the training, the martial arts training,
yep.
everything. Yeah, it's amazing.
One other thing I wanted to get into is to try to, we've already discussed what self-realization means, but I think there may be some misinterpretation about that in Western audiences about, well, it's just kind of affirming yourself. Yes, it is that. Self-realization starts with self-confidence and self-satisfaction, the sense that one is a self-actualized individual. But it goes on from there. When one becomes truly self-aware, one becomes aware of something that is within one and around one, which is aware, which extends from oneself into all of creation, which dwells in everything and also in the heart. And when one becomes aware of that, one essentially then becomes a mystic. A person who is devoted in one way or another, in one tradition or another, or no tradition, to what they call God or awareness or the universe. And then self-realization is the not just the awareness of that in the sense of duality, but the sense of identification to the point where one becomes exactly that. One becomes an expression or a messenger of divinity.
And so I imagine once you reach that a higher state, that the problems of the world and everything else just melt away, right? It's like something bad happens and it's no big deal.
No, not really.
To me, that sounds awesome. Oh, really?
The problems of the world don't go away. You just become more responsible for them. You become highly responsible as a self-aware individual. The more self-aware you are, the greater servant you can be. But that doesn't mean that the problems of the world go away.
Personal problems. Say if you get sick or you have a car accident or something like that. I guess that's what I meant, I guess.
Yeah. So it's not as if the problems and challenges of life go away, but you are enabled to go through them without a sense of clinging. So you might even feel grief or sadness or, you know, all the emotions that one can have as a human being, but you experience them with a divine sort of detachment. So you're not imprisoned by those feelings. They come into you, they go out of you, and what then enables is the person to not be bedeviled by those feelings, and at the same time allows him to be in a harmless relationship with others. If I'm not attaching to my feelings as they come and go, that means that I don't hold grudges. I'm not jealous of other people. I don't hang on to the sense of envy, so on and so forth.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, just able to release things and not dwell and focus on them. move forward.
It leads to a highly energetic way of living. That doesn't mean frenetic, but you become activated.
Can't fault that. I mean, that sounds like that'd be great, you know, if somebody could go through life without dwelling on stuff. It seems like everybody or the majority of the people out there, you know, there's so much negativity in the world and selfishness and that's what this world needs. Everybody needs to wake up and start meditating and start living in such a materialistic world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not materialism. It's not the material which is the problem. It's the attachment to the material. So one thing that I've read some other esoteric books, and one of them I remember saying that one of the greatest successes of the lords of darkness, or the those who are on the evil side of things, you might say, in the universe, was to create the impression in Christianity that the world was evil, that the world was a sinful and dark place. And what's that has created is the possibility for a politics and an economic system which is not infused particularly by spirituality, which is in a large degree devoid of spirituality, where it's thought that spirituality is up on a mountaintop, or it's in a cave in the Himalayas, or you know, this and that, in a way separate from physical reality. But that's not really so. In fact, you might look at it in the sense that materiality in the negative sense is being imprisoned by matter, being in a material experience without an awareness of a spiritual reality. But in the sense of spiritual, if you become spiritual, it doesn't mean you stop being material. It means it becomes a smaller and smaller part of the whole. So by becoming spiritual, I don't need to go to a mountaintop. I don't need to go to the Himalayas. I don't need to remove myself from the world. But my perspective gradually enlarges until I become identified with all that is.
I love that. I love that, the way it is. That's the way you described it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it definitely sounds interesting. I look up that website from earlier. I had pulled it up and just kind of glanced at it.
So I wanted to read another little excerpt from Autobiography of a Yogi. So how do I describe it? Swami Trailanga was a very, what's the word for someone who plays tricks on people? Just a little bit.
Prankster, maybe?
He's a bit of a divine prankster. That's right. So this fellow was known to be over 300 years old. And was 300 pounds, 1 year apparently for every year of his life.
Wow.
And so I'll read some quotes here. Trailanga's fame is so widespread that few Hindus would deny the possibility of truth in any story of his astounding miracles. If Christ returned to the earth and walked the streets of New York displaying his divine powers, it would cause the same excitement that was created by Trailanga decades ago as he passed through the crowded lanes of Benares. On many occasions, the Swami was seen to drink with no ill effect the most deadly poisons. Thousands of people, including a few who are still living, have seen Trailanga floating on the Ganges. For days together, he would sit on top of the water or remain hidden for very long periods under the waves. A common sight at Benares Bathing Ghats was the Swami's motionless body on the blistering stone slabs, wholly exposed to the merciless Indian sun. By these feats, Trailanga sought to teach men that a yogi's life does not depend upon oxygen or on ordinary conditions and precautions. Whether he were above water or under it, and whether or not his body lay exposed to the fierce solar rays, the master proved that he lived by divine consciousness. Death could not touch him. So in this case, I wanted to bring that back to what we were discussing about oxygen and its power. The mastery of the yoga is that he's learn to depend upon a life stream which transcends oxygen. He's transmuted the oxygen factor into a life factor. So that's why they can live without actually remain in periods, long periods of suspended animation, where they're not apparently breathing and no circulation, no pulse. So, whereas we're ordinarily dependent upon oxygen in order to continue to live. So, so here I'll continue. Trailunga always remained completely nude. The harassed police of Benares came to regard him as a baffling problem child. The natural Swami, like the early Adam in the Garden of Eden, was utterly unconscious of his nakedness. The police were quite conscious of it, however, and unceremoniously committed him to jail. General embarrassment ensued. The enormous body of Trailunga was soon seen in its usual entirety on the prison roof. His cell, still securely locked, offered no clue to his mode of escape.
So he was able to get out of his cell? Is that...
Yeah, just literally demanifest himself and manifest himself on top of the of the jail.
I've heard of people doing that before inadvertently, like walking through a sliding glass door and appearing on the other side, like without even realizing it, and turning around and it's closed. I've heard of stuff like that before.
Most of us would just smack our head uncomfortably on the glass and hope nobody was watching.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine to reach that level of enlightenment, that would be, I don't know, that'd be, take forever. But you hear about I've heard stories of these Tibetan monks, you know, that are way up in the Himalayas that...
Mm-hmm.
can float and stuff like that. You know, me, I'm always kind of skeptical because I see all these magic tricks of these swami-looking people, you know, sitting on this rig that makes it look like they're floating. So I'm always kind of, you know.
Well, I think the important thing for the Western audience is to remember that the miracles are really incidental. What's important is the transformation in the person's consciousness and their ability to be in a much more holistic relationship with their family, with themselves, and with society. And I don't mean that they are simply, you know, constantly trying to please others or please authorities, as Trailunga's example shows. But it's a relationship of continuity and complete awareness with everyday life. And then the benefits then are unmistakable. They don't need to include the miraculous aspects.
What do you think, Sherry?
It's amazing. I like it. I like the idea of it. It's like every thought is either you can win or lose each thought, positive or negative. Any thoughts, you know, can in your actions. It's conscious every moment. And what you do and how it impacts other people. And it's something that we all can work at. It's just a matter of degrees.
On that note, I wanted to read something from Sai Baba, who is another great, great avatar. I would, in addition to Self-Realization Fellowship and of course, Share International, which I volunteer for, I would highly recommend that any of our listeners look into getting some inspiration from Sai Baba. In fact, I've had the great pleasure of having subscribed to the an email list called Sai Inspires from Prasanthi Nilayam, which is the place where he for many years worked. And these are just very short quotes that you get in the email every day, and they're just amazing. Just had such a positive effect on the person. In fact, probably 2 weeks ago, I experienced a kind of minor miracle while I was reading one of these emails. I was reading one of these Sai Inspires emails, and my cell phone was just sitting on the table next to me. And I finished the Sai Inspires email. It was all about becoming infused with love and devotion. And I looked at my cell phone, and there was an email that had been composed, or a text that had composed on my text on my cell phone that said, "I love you."
Wow.
Yeah. Very strange.
Oh, that's awesome.
And these are the things, types of things that Sai Baba and many of these avatars are known to do. They're known to give minor, sometimes major miracles to people on a frequent or relatively frequent basis. There's just autobiography of a yogi is chock full of these, just things that are unbelievable to the Western audience, but very interesting. Anyway, I wanted to read one of these emails.
Okay.
So this is Sai Baba. "To get happiness and peace, you must develop a pure and unsullied mind, free from egoism and its progenies, lust, greed, anger, hatred, envy, and the rest. For this, you must seek noble company, satsanga, perform good deeds, satkarma, entertain only good thoughts, sat alochana, and read only noble and elevating books, sat granthas. You may see 1,000 good things, or listen to 1,000 inspirational speeches, or read 1,000 good books, but unless you put at least one of their teachings into practice, the blemishes in the mirror of your heart will not be wiped off. The Lord cannot be reflected if the mirror of the heart is not clean. Remember, you are but a wave of the sea. Know this, and you are free. Constant practice with full faith will transmute a human, Nara, into God, Narayana, for divinity is your real nature, your real essence."
Wow.
That's pretty good. Wow.
Anyway, I always love them because they have such a high tone. Leave you feeling just blissful and far more free.
Well, I know that I would definitely benefit from spending some time and researching this a little bit further. Sherry. I'm full of anxiety and everything. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Life is, we are blessed, Jason. All of us, you, me, and Mike, and our families, hopefully, are blessed. You know,
and our
trying to look at things at the bright side of things. And we have our moments. I have my days, and I have my moments. But, you know, it's just trying to be thankful for what you have. And, yeah, last couple months, is a lot of it is, for me, it's turning inward, doing the work.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to leave our listeners with one last thing before I go. I've got a website in which I will be giving reviews on a lot of these books, and also have a resource for our listeners, a search engine, which will basically search a lot of these different texts and pull up the various hits and things like that. It's not perfect yet. There's still some errors with it, but it and the website I wanted to give to you right now. And it's agelesswisdomreader.org. So ageless, A-G-E-L-E-S-S, W-I-S-D-O-M, R-E-A-D-E-R.org. And you can contact me through the website. Should be able to.
It's called agelesswisdom.org, correct?
Ageless Wisdom Reader. So it's a...
Oh, ageless, okay. All right.
Reader.org. And we have a little search engine in the bottom right of it. A Google custom search, which will go through a lot of these sacred texts or great texts and allow you to search to your heart's content. And again, it's not quite perfect yet, but it will be getting there.
Okay.
And,
is this your website in particular?
Yep. I've created it. And my first post that's actually from yesterday, December 17, is a review of a wonderful book, which I have not talked about tonight, called Maitreya's Teachings, The Laws of Life.
Wow.
And this is a book of transcriptions of talks given by a great, great avatar who I've talked about in the past, Maitreya, who is at the present time not known to the public, but will be in the near future, in the coming decades. And he is, according to Share International, the world teacher for the age of Aquarius, in the same way that Jesus.
Yeah, I love avatars. They are an example, you know, from Gandhi to Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
Of how the human can show compassion and love and of service and like you said, practicing detachment.
Yeah. And it's even important to note, and all the great gurus say this, is to detach from the person of the avatar or the person of the guru. It's not necessary to become a devotee, and it's especially important not to run after somebody. When you run after an individual, when you renounce your individuality, you lose track. You lose sight of the practice of self-realization, because it's not just his self or yourself, but the self, which is important. So, Maitreya is not someone who will be asking us in any way to go after him, but will be sharing with us all this principle that I've been talking about, self-realization.
Awesome.
Wow, that's awesome.
All right. Well, it looks like we are running out of time, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time to coming on Paranormal Horizons and teaching us a little bit about that. I'm going to do a little research on myself. I've got that web page up right now that you talked about. Let me pull it up here again, the transmissionmeditation.org. So if anybody wants to learn more about that, then check that out.
I would also check out Barry Carter's site. That's Subtle Energies and Self-Realization Fellowship.
Subtle Energy? Okay.
Yeah, this is the one that was talking about the Ormus, the sort of magical substance. That's www.subtleenergies.com.
Okay, I got it. Excellent.
I bet you one day they're going to like be able to manufacture Ormus and it'll be like an energy drink or something.
I have no doubt about it. But, of course, we're going to have to know a little bit more about it before that happens.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all that information with us this evening.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was great.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Sherry.
Being on the show and sharing your wisdom and your practice with our listeners. It's enlightening. I love it. That's awesome. Thank you.
And thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. You're always welcome back.
Look forward to it.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
Oh,
good night.
That was cool, Jason. Something new to learn. I love the show because, you know, even though that I, you know, have my own practice, it's always nice to know what other people are doing and just kind of learning. You don't have to apply it. If it doesn't apply, then don't use it. But it expands your horizons and helps you become less judgmental of what's out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think more people need to meditate and find, you know, if not this, something else that gets them more centered and less consumed with what's happening.
Exactly. And, you know, when I teach yoga, I've been teaching yoga for, oh my gosh, this seems like forever. And when I teach yoga at the college, you know, I have a lot of students for each class. And I just tell them, you just center yourself. That's exactly what I say. Center yourself. You don't have to lay down for half an hour. You know, just like you said, just center yourself and it's all good. So it's all good. All right. Well, Jason, I think we're going to take a break next week. It's Christmas, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going by really, really fast. And I know that 2017 is going to be very good for us. So anyway, I think we're going to take a break next week, and then the following week we do have a guest. And hey, to be honest with you, I am right now. Oh no, we don't have a guest. We're going to do open lines. That's right. We're going to talk. We talked about that. We're going to have open lines, and kind of swing it and see what's out there. Hey, good way to bring in the new year, being creative and get some new things on the plate.
I think I'll see if I can find any paranormal Christmas stories. That would be interesting.
That'd be great. And I do want to tell our listeners, and I'm very, very pleased, we're going to have David Weatherly. So I'm really excited. We're hopefully going to have him in the end of January. And as long as he's not going to be called for doing a movie or a television shoot for cable, we're going to have him at the end of January. Let's how would I say, worst case scenario, he'll be on for February if he's getting called to do a TV show for cable on Paranormal. So, yes, he did confirm, and I'm really, really excited. He's just well known, just like John Zaffis, Andrea Perone.
Mm.
So, yeah, we're going to be...
I think I've talked to him before. I don't know if it was on this show or the other show I used to be on, but I know he's the Black Eyed Children.
Yes, very hard to get a hold
yes.
of.
Okay.
Very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
He is just very much in demand, does a lot of work in his own arena with becoming, you know, just from cryptozoology to paranormal investigation. He's just, you know, way up there and as far as getting around, you know, the people like Barry Gott, you know, just really good people. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm going to have some really good questions for him because I'll be honest with you, Sherry. I am completely a non-believer in black-eyed children.
Okay.
Staunch non-believer.
You're one of those. You have to experience it, right? Yeah.
Well,
I've
said
enough about him that anything is possible, Jason. I've never encountered, knock on wood and pray to God it never happens, but I do believe that they exist. And just like UFOs, I've never personally experienced a UFO, and I know you have. But I know they exist. I know they exist, but it's just I've never had the opportunity to have that. So, you know, you just hope that you'll never have that encounter. If somebody comes in and say, I need help, whether it's such a black-eyed children or adult, you just close the door. Don't let them in. Because I hear a lot of people get sick and they die from that encounters. So
I know somebody that has claimed to have an experience with them, but I'll save this most of what I know for the show. But I tell you, you know, you can buy those Solera lenses for $100 that black out your eyes. You know, you see them in the movies.
Oh,
but
really?
Also, yeah, anybody, you can order them online. But also, that the black-eyed children phenomenon didn't become even really known until after a movie came out that had them in it. And that's when it blew up. So, but we'll
really?
Save all that for the next show. Yeah.
We'll find out from David what, you know, if there are people that had experience, but they just was too afraid to come forward. You know, that's interesting. Very, it's creepy. It's like the Children of the Corn. Remember that?
Well, yeah, it's like these urban legends, like Slender Man and all this other stuff. Now, I could be totally wrong, and maybe they exist, and maybe they're listening to the show, and they're going to get all pissed off, and tonight when I go to bed at night, there's going to be like 25 black-eyed kids in my room, and my opinion on it would have changed if that happened. So
are they
we'll
gonna, you're going to dream of them.
Yeah, yeah. No, thank you. Black-eyed children crawling on
well,
the wall.
Well, I just don't want to put it past that they do exist, you know. Just you know, there's so much out there, like I said, in this three-dimensional world that we don't, that we probably still haven't experienced, but it's amazing. But, you know, we can always talk about something else. But, yeah, that'd be quite interesting. So I'm working on getting some guests, some really good well-known guests, you know, just not just, you know, the local little ones, you know, but somebody that's got some credibility and everything. So, yeah, it's going to be really a good year, and I'm looking forward to growing and growing our show, and just it's going to be good.
That's awesome. Hey, I'm on our Facebook page. You know, that video I posted on that UFO wormhole Stargate thing, that it reached nearly 350 people. Wow.
Really? Wow. Good
yeah,
for you. I'm proud of you. I try and post here and there, but, you know, it's kind of random, and I don't know, you know, I try and keep it active, but sometimes I get busy and, you know, kind of thing. But, yeah, I'm glad. It's amazing. I saw that, and it's like, huh, what is a Stargate? But, yeah, it's cool. I'm excited. I'm glad you're participating in our page.
Yeah, I don't post much, but if I see something that's really interesting, I'll post it. I've really, that's not the only page I have. There are other pages I have that I've completely neglected. I don't know why. I'm not really into posting stuff. Maybe it's just because I'm so discouraged at all the fake stuff out there. And
yeah.
I don't know if something's real or fake. Why post it? Because if it turns out to be fake, then you're basically just making the problem worse. But anyways, yeah, so
I don't know if they're fake or not,
out.
But it's quite interesting. It gives the person that's reading or looking at the pictures in question, I don't know if they are fake. I'm not one that trained at that, but it gives the subjects in our radio show, it just gives people something to look at and maybe question whether it's true or not. I'm not the one to judge, so.
That's right. All right. Well, I think I'm going to eat some tacos.
Wow, that sounds good. I wish you lived closer, Jason. I'd have tacos with you.
Ah, yes. I know. You're so far out there.
I know. Well, you're not going to have no excuse pretty soon. We're going to have to do some new commercials and get a new introduction. So I'm going to hold
yeah.
you to it, even if I got to meet you in Portland or something, and we're just going to get it together and have lunch or something, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. Hey, everybody, Merry Christmas. We wish you a lot of love and peace, and thank you for listening to us and supporting us throughout the years. And, yes, be safe and love everybody.
Absolutely. So I hope everybody has a great week, and we will not be here next week. We'll be the week after for open lines and free discussion and all that. And with that, we'll bid everybody adieu. And good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Merry Christmas. Peace.